call the Metro Council meeting for October 26th to order. Note that we are missing Councillor Craddock, who is excused, but we have a quorum. And I have first order of business or public communications, and I have a number of them. So I'm going to call you up if I can. I think by let's do threes. And actually, I've got a couple of different topics, so maybe if I can call the Unite Here and Launa people up first. So Michael Hawkins and Dave Moore, why don't you guys come up first? And then we'll follow that with me and Dana. Hey, you might as well come on up too. We'll get all four of you up here. Mikhail.
Hi, my name's Dave Moore. We met a few weeks ago. I want to thank you all for giving us a chance to speak again. We're here to talk about parking at OCC for Pacific Wild, the food and beverage contractors for the building. And the last meeting that we had, what we had talked about was just the fact that with the hotel being built, there's kind of a growing sense of that the Lloyd lot that is going to go away at some point, that there'd be parking provided for the full-time and part-time employees. And I think what the issue is, obviously there's safety issues. People want to feel like they're getting to work and feeling safe about it, and having an idea on where they're going to park is really important. What we get from people is that they know that a lot is going away, and they want to have an idea and kind of know for sure that there's a plan in place and what that plan is going to be. You know, we have some ideas. We've heard a couple things from the building, but nothing is set in stone. And that's really where the challenge for us is that we want to know what it is. Obviously, everybody here, when we fear change, when we don't know what's going to happen, we don't know it's in the future. And so we don't want to deal with any rumor or innuendo spreading around the building on what or what might not happen. And so that's kind of what we're here, is to get some clarity, get something concrete so we can go back to the employees and let them know what's going to happen in the future. We know it's a couple years down the road. We get that. But just knowing that we can tell our employees what's going to happen, where they can park, how much it's going to be, all of those specific information is really important to people going forward. You know, we had talked about last time about a lot of these employees. You know, they've been at the building for a long time, and we've talked about the difference between subcontractors and not being subcontractors. Yes, officially we are a subcontractor for the building, but in a lot of ways we've been through a couple food and beverage companies. So, you know, in my mind, we're not two-week employees. We're full-time employees that have full commitment to the building. And so that being the case, you know, I feel like going forward, just having a place to park seems like a simple thing. I mean, we should have a very easy and comfortable option for that. And I just think, you know, I just want to stress that people just want to know what's going on, and when there's a lack of information out there, it just makes it very uncomfortable for people. And so we want to bring something back to them, and I urge to work with you on some sort of idea session going forward. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Ms. Aka.
Council, my name is Michael Hawkins. I work for Aramark at the Oregon Convention Center. I'm a senior lead there for food and beverage, and I primarily, in the last 10 years, have been striving for bus passes for people that I work with. The last time I was here, you asked about a survey, and we did happen to be able to do a survey with our employees. It's I estimate that we have about 250 people on our roster. It's hard to get to all of them when we work from 4 a.m. to 2 o'clock a.m. in the morning. But I was able to reach 113 people. 59 people right now take the bus every day to work. 19 people are driving, but would take the bus if a pass was provided. 23 people drive. 13 people drive and would switch. On the 19 people, they would take the bus more. And then the 13 people would definitely switch. We do have several workers that do walk to work, and so they wanted that to be known too. The last time that we spoke, Ms. Collette, did I say your name right? You had requested some information from the chief operating officer on bus passes and parking at four different locations.
I think it was Councillor Harrington, actually. But,
pardon me?
Yeah, I think it was Councillor Harrington, actually.
I apologize for that. But I was wondering if we had gotten any of that. Okay. So I would also, along with Dave, like to be able to request, like if we were to have a meeting with myself and David, maybe one or two other workers, we would greatly appreciate that.
Hello again. I'm Dean Marston, often bartender at Portland 5 Center for the Arts, currently on leave from my job, working full-time for our union, Unite Here Local 8. And we have been conducting this survey. We're still conducting this survey. We're hoping to get further results, but we've got roughly half of the shop surveyed at this point. And I think the numbers are very compelling. And, we know we already have a form of subsidized parking here that Metro generously provides for our employees that work here in the food and beverage department. And perhaps, there's a few different ways to go here, right? And I think one way is perhaps to include the food and beverage department in with whatever program may be active for other folks that work at Convention Center, if that makes sense. There's something of an equity argument to be made there. I mean, our folks, as Dave pointed out, they're OCC people. If Aramark ever leaves, God forbid, they're going to stay with OCC, right? And the same with me. Like, if Aramark leaves P5, I'm going to stay at P5, right? That's my home. So we do feel that there's an equity argument to be made there for us to be included in whatever transit opportunities are available for other folks there. And I just also wanted to point out we would like to meet with someone either on your staff or one of the counselors here to discuss this further. And, we want to make sure that we have a seat at the table as this is going forward, as these discussions are being had about parking and specifically as that's currently in flux, and we all know it's going to be going through some changes. And I think too, to speak to Dave Moore and what he said about clarity, there is a lot of concern and anxiety about that among the workers, and maybe like a posting on the board might be something that could be done to dispel a lot of rumors, like, hey, here's what we're planning. I think something like that, which is, I feel like, not a whole lot of, skin off of y'all, would go a long way towards allaying some of these fears and concerns that people have. I think it's likely that y'all have a plan, or at least, working on a plan. You know that people drive, and you know that people got to park. So maybe just, the ability for us to be included in those discussions, and also whatever you do have planned, if we could see that, and maybe even post it for the members to see, that would really go a long way in helping people's anxiety. And then we also have been looking into other transit programs. on our end as well, but we would like to open a discussion with y'all about us potentially participating and what other employees at OCC participate in terms of a discounted pass. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Dana.
Hello again, Council. I just got off of work, and I just wanted to give you guys a heads up on some of my concerns at the Oregon Zoo. They're doing job reclassifications to try to create more permanent positions. Great. I'm really happy about it. I've been fighting for that for years. However, they're taking the jobs of five different departments and combining them into one. Now, as a business perspective, I don't think that makes any sense. You're combining jobs from admissions, food, catering, security, and events. That's a lot of different jobs that a lot of people different do, but now it's being bundled up into one job classification. Most of that work is admissions work, from my looking at it, but they're starting the salary at a food service worker 2 position, the second lowest paid position at the Oregon Zoo. I love working at the Oregon Zoo. There are a ton of people who work at the Oregon Zoo who stay there because they love it. They don't stay because of the pay. But to be the best the Oregon Zoo can be, we have to start paying a living wage. You know, there's other incidents that we're having issues with at the Oregon Zoo now, Monday through Friday. You know how you buy a ticket, you go in there, someone scans it. It doesn't happen anymore because they want to save a four-hour shift at $12.40. Litter crew walks around, keeps the zoo clean, Monday through Wednesday now, maybe Monday through Thursday. No morning litter crew, or sometimes no litter crew at all for the day. So no one's walking around cleaning the zoo to save a four-hour shift of $11.50, maybe $12. The zoo needs to have long-term vision for cost savings. I get it. It's extremely expensive to run that zoo. But if the vision for the zoo is so myopic that the only way to have cost savings for the zoo is to cut labor, low-wage labor at that, we need to take a very hard look at the leadership of the zoo. That is not a long-term solution that's going to benefit the zoo or the region or the people who love the zoo, whether it be the patrons, you, the workers, or the donors. Again, I want to reiterate, I understand their stress. It's, you know, extremely expensive. But let's look at different options here. We don't need to start cutting litter crew. We don't need to start piling up five different departments into one position, pay them the lowest wage possible. We don't need to cut scanners because of a four-hour, $12.40 shift. Let's find better solutions here. Let's talk together. I mean, there's got to be a better way. And so I just wanted to give you guys a heads up about my concern with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Any questions?
Any questions? Okay. Thank you. Eric Wendland and Adam Borgens. Mr. Wendland, you've already indicated that you're going to go over time and that Mr. Borgens is going to give you some of his time.
Well, unless you want to hear him read Terrell's statement after I've read part of Terrell's statement, sure, but that would be helpful. We can keep some continuity.
Sure. Go ahead and read the statement.
Quite odd that we followed them because it wasn't intended this way, but there is a tie in here. Council President Hughes and members of the council, today I wish to talk with you about racial equity and employment. Two statements have guided my thoughts and are the core of my testimony today. First, racial equity in employment starts with and cannot exist without the most basic tenet, the ability to obtain employment at a living wage. Second, if there is to be more than lip service to the efforts of obtaining racial equity in employment, those with the greatest inequity, who have been denied a living wage, must be helped before all others. Last week, I attended your work session at the Northwest Health Foundation, which was focused on racial equity. A portion of the session was devoted to a presentation which concluded that there is a gross lack of racial equity in the solid waste industry. As I stood listening to this presentation, I kept saying to myself, that's not correct. That's not true. After a few minutes of hearing myself internally repeating these statements, I realized I was wrong. The group's conclusions are correct, not only for the single facility they visited, Metro Central Transfer Station, but also for a large portion of the solid waste industry. Greenway Recycling is one of the few exceptions. For many years, the goal of creating equity and employment has been our focus. While we are not there yet, we are still leading the industry. We start new laborers at $13.50 an hour and after 90 days increase them to $15 an hour plus health benefits. In fact, our laborers' average pay, because they get some overtime, is around $40,000 a year, just a couple of thousand less than a Metro counselor, by the way, I think. Be glad to talk to any of you about a job. Of our 24 employees, two-thirds are people of color. Two of these employees have risen from laborer jobs to equipment operator positions, making over $60,000 a year. Another immigrant, Guillermo, is the face of our company, greeting trucks as they arrive, checking loads, and chatting with drivers when things are busy. Advancement, training, and equity in employment for all are how we have chosen to do business for years. I did some research and found information which you will undoubtedly find as disheartening as I did. I talked to a laborer at Metro Central Transfer Station, and he told me they start as temps at the Portland minimum wage of $11.25 an hour for 90 days. Then, if they are offered a full-time position, they receive the same wage plus benefits. Otherwise, they just stay as temps at minimum wage. I learned that a food service worker employed by Metro starts at $11.28 an hour and after 3.5 years will make $14.37 an hour. A seasonal educator at the zoo who teaches our children starts at $11.25 an hour and after 3 years makes all of $12. This is someone teaching our children. By the way, I didn't know these guys were going to be here. I know that. In your October 31st work session, you will meet regarding the Metro Solid Waste Innovation and Investment Program proposal prepared by staff. This proposal encompasses two great ideas: innovation in recycling and waste reduction, plus racial equity, diversity, and inclusion. The proposed program seeks to induce businesses to do the right thing by giving them money to do so. As written, this program will only be available to those who have not yet achieved equity and fairness in employment. How can this be fair to those who are already meeting the goal? As noted earlier, many solid waste businesses, including Metro, do not provide the most basic requirement and the first building block of racial equity, a living wage. To put it simply, you can't build a good house without a solid foundation. The first 3 years of this program should be focused on encouraging the solid waste industry to focus on and adopt the reality of providing the minimum of racial equity in employment, the ability to obtain a living wage. Instead of rewarding companies to achieve this minimum, we will all be better served by making it a prerequisite for applying for a grant from Metro. If a company does not meet this requirement, they should not be allowed to apply. Metro should not pay businesses to do the right thing, but rather should demand it prior to consideration for any program. I challenge you, the Council, to make it your priority to meet or exceed this most basic tenet of racial equity in employment that has already been pioneered by Greenway. Provide a minimum wage of $15 per hour plus health insurance for all employees of longer than 90 days employment and required of all contractors in all programs. Unless Metro walks the walk first, this proposed grant program will be nothing but a sham. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Borgens. Oh, the two of you were a team, eh?
He could have read the other. This was from Terrell, and, you know, you guys didn't want to actually have Terrell here anyway. So.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. That's all the cards that I had for today, and I don't see anybody else coming forward, so we'll move on to the next item of business, which is the consent agenda. Today's consent agenda consists of three items: the minute for the October 19th council meeting, Resolution number 174834 and resolution number 174835. Is there a motion? Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Fourth item on the agenda are resolutions. Resolution number 174846. Ms. Papstorp, could you read that by title only?
Resolution number 17-4846, for the purpose of approving fiscal year 2017-2018 funding for planning and development grants funded with construction excise tax.
Moved and seconded. Ms. Bennett.
You all know that we are going to be asking you to consider a slate of recommended grants in just a second. I'm going to invite Alyssa Gertler and Ed McNamara up to the podium to make the staff presentation.
Ed, you're joining the staff.
That's
great.
That's great. My best
hire
yet.
For 90 days.
Yeah. You mean as volunteer? Let's be clear.
That's very minimum.
Yeah. It's about as minimum as you can get.
Hi, everyone. I'm Alyssa Gertler. I'm your planning director, and I'm sitting with Ed McNamara, who you are already giving a hard time to before he's even started talking. So I'll get through my part as fast as possible so he can do his part and you can do yours. We're happy to be here to talk about the 2040 Planning and Development Grants. This is our sixth round of awarding these grants, and as you know, with each cycle, we have evolved them. I'll stay here. As you can see, it actually has a new name for the program. We've called them Community Planning and Development Grants, and now we call them the 2040 Planning and Development Grants, or we try to, anyway. We've also shifted from a cycle that hasn't been as predictable to a cycle that is now every year, so that we will be awarding grants every year to help local jurisdictions be able to meet development cycle goals a little bit better. We've also firmed up the amount we will award every year to a $2 million stable amount, again, to increase predictability both for us and for our jurisdictional partners. We have streamlined some of the grant criteria and the eligible project types, all in the name of customer service, local jurisdiction friendliness, as well as program administration and performance. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about, the changes that we did this year, is that we established some targets for how we would divide the funds. The council set a policy target to emphasize equitable development, to set aside half the funds for equitable development, projects that will facilitate either serving historically underserved communities or by promoting equitable housing. That's the definition of that Metro is using of equitable housing: diverse, quality, physically accessible, affordable housing choices with access to opportunities, services, and amenities. As you know, we also set aside $500,000 or 25% of the funds to development in new urban areas and urban reserves for the required planning to bring areas closer to development. And then the rest of the funds were focused on facilitating all kinds of development that we'd like to see inside the urban growth boundary. As COO Bennett noted, she appointed a 9-member committee to oversee all of the applications. We had an amazing committee with all kinds of diverse backgrounds and experience. Ed McNamara was generous enough to donate his time to us, and I'd like to thank him for joining us and telling us about the committee's recommendation.
Council President Hughes, members of the council, as you know, my name is Ed McNamara, and I'm here to represent our grants committee and present our recommendations for awards for this year. And on behalf of the entire committee, I want to thank you for giving us the opportunity to participate in something this exciting. And I also want to, before I start, commend and thank the staff for putting together such a great committee, particularly Megan Gibb and Lisa Miles. It was really one of the most productive committees I've participated on in a long time. So I've gotten selective about what I'm joining, and this one was a lot of fun. So as you know, Metro had $2 million in funding available for the grants this year, received requests totaling $3.7 million in 18 grant proposals. Proposals were submitted by 9 jurisdictions, both large and small from across the region, with applicants distributed throughout all 3 counties. We're going to recommend to to you that you fund 8 of those proposals that total about $1.86 million. And let me tell you first how we reach those recommendations. The 9 members of the committee first convened in July to review the program guidelines, the grant evaluation criteria, the grant requirements, and the committee's charter. Staff explained the council's policy and investment emphasis for the 2017 grant cycle. And then staff shared the staff's overall assessment of the strengths and weaknesses of the proposals in each of these 3 funding categories that Alyssa referred to. After the initial meeting, each member individually reviewed all of the grant applications, which were long, and we each assigned our own preliminary rankings within each of the 3 categories. We reconvened in August. We looked at our combined rankings, and then we began to deliberate. Though some of the proposals scored very high or very low, would have been easy to just automatically fund those or discard those. We didn't take that approach. We discussed each of our individual rankings for those, and it actually wound up changing some minds. We had wonderful, robust discussions. Your staff assembled this committee with a broad range of knowledge about the region and expertise in planning and development, and it resulted, I think, in a good discussion about the strengths and weaknesses of the proposals, the problems that the proposals were trying to address, and the effectiveness of their proposed strategy in addressing that problem. So after we had our robust and thoughtful discussion of the relative merits, we came to a unanimous decision regarding the proposals to recommend for grant funding. We stuck to 2 major criteria. First, what the staff had laid out for us, they had to align with the program's central mission to support this kind of planning and pre-development that would, A, remove barriers to development, B, that are necessary to make land ready for development, and C, that enable existing developed sites to be redeveloped. The second criteria that we added was to make sure that these proposals had clear and achievable goals and would be likely to produce the development outcomes that were in alignment with these criteria, that we weren't just going to fund something because it sounded good, but we really had to believe in the team and their approach. So we submitted our recommendations to Chief Operating Officer Martha Bennett on October 4th, recommending that 8 projects be fully funded for a total of $1,861,746. And we recommended that part of the unspent funds be available to the staff for technical assistance to a few of the proposals as they saw fit. So before we look at the list of projects that we're going to fund, that hopefully you're going to fund, I want to explain why we do not recommend awarding the full $2 million that's available. We did start out trying to come up with a list of projects that would use up all $2 million. But as we kept discussing these proposals, we realized that we were trying to fund a few projects that we didn't think really fully met all the criteria that we were looking at. And so we changed our discussion, and we started to ask, do we have to use all $2 million? So we're recommending you don't, and we're recommending that because we believe, one, this is the best use of your funding available, and two, that by holding to a higher standard for the grantees, that you will get better grant proposals in the future. And so we hope you adopt that recommendation. So with that said, let's look at our recommendations. In the category of equitable development, we are recommending the City of Cornelius get an award of $315,000 for their Cornelius Urban Renewal Plan, their Town Center Plan, and Conceptual Site Planning. We're recommending the Housing Authority of Clackamas County be awarded $214,000 for the Hillside Master Plan for Housing Opportunity. We're recommending that Clackamas County be awarded $180,000 for the Park Avenue Development Design Standards. And we are recommending that the Multnomah County City of Portland Joint Office of Homeless Services, this is a long one, get awarded $150,000 for the Tri-County Strategy to expand permanent supportive housing for people experiencing chronic homelessness. In other words, not just deal with this within the city limits of Portland and Multnomah County, but to expand it to a tri-county operation. We're very excited by it. In the second category, for development within the UGB, we're recommending the City of Beaverton be awarded $150,000 for the Downtown Design and Development Readiness Project. City of Tigard be awarded $340,246 for the Tigard Triangle Urban Renewal Implementation Project, and the City of Portland be awarded $112,500 for the Rossi Farms site-specific development plan. In the third category, for new urban area planning, we're recommending that the City of Happy Valley be awarded $400,000 for the Pleasant Valley North Carver Comprehensive Plan. So to summarize, in the three categories, equitable development, you had $1 million set aside. We're proposing awards totaling $859,000. In the category for development within the UGB, you had funds targeted of $500,000. We're proposing awards of $602,746. And for new urban areas, you had $500,000 set aside. We're recommending awards of $400,000 for our total recommendation of $1.8 and change. I understand that Metro's Chief Operating Officer, Martha Bennett, has an additional recommendation to share with you, and I look forward to your final decision. Once again, on behalf of all of us, I want to thank you for allowing us to participate in this and to assist you in funding projects that are going to advance our local and regional development goals and implement our shared vision for the future. Thank you very much.
So I think the council is aware, because we talked about this during work session, but after reviewing the committee's recommendation and the list of projects that they did not fund, I thought that there was one project in the list that actually met the criteria that is set forth in your code and in the committee's discussion that should be funded this round, and that is the City of Portland's expanding opportunities for affordable housing in faith communities. I felt like it met the criteria for addressing difficult development projects that face difficult development circumstances and also would lead to redevelopment of underdeveloped properties in the region. At the time the committee saw the project, they were concerned that the project was a theoretical project as opposed to an actual development project, and so I recommend you add this condition that we find letters of support from at least three faith-based institutions that are willing to partner with the City of Portland and to explore opportunities for actual construction so that you would actually yield development outcomes through this grant. I also want to thank the committee for their very thoughtful discussion about not feeling like they had to come up to $2 million even. I thought that was a really solid recommendation based on the care and thought that the committee put into making sure we're funding really good projects. And I also think, as we talked about during the work session, it's important for us to encourage those folks who submitted applications this cycle where they had a good idea or concept but the project wasn't quite ready for funding to work with Metro staff and to be ready to apply again next year, because I think one of the best improvements we've made is turning this into an annual cycle as opposed to every other kind of year cycle, which actually came as a recommendation from the jurisdictions that we're granting these funds to. So we want to make sure that those projects that are on the list that are potentially great projects come back and get redefined so that we can fund them next year or the year after that. With that, I think we'd all love to take your questions.
Questions for any and all? Let me go back to... Okay, then. Councillor Harrington.
Before I go to my question, I want to thank you, Mr. McNamara. We've never met before. I know that you must be skilled in the world of community development and finance. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been asked to donate your experience. But unlike my colleagues, you and I don't know one another from Adam. So I'll apologize in advance for that. The question I have, I'm not sure I heard you correctly in one part, and I'm pleased with all these recommendations, but I'm not sure I heard you correctly when you were talking about the work that the steering committee had done in evaluating the applications and the levels of criteria that our rules specify, you know, for the folks to apply to the grant. I thought I heard you say that the steering committee added an additional layer of requirement for clear and achievable goals. And I thought to myself, I must have heard this incorrectly, because I can't imagine that we wrote a grant that wouldn't have required some clear and achievable goals. So can you please set me straight on that?
Yeah, that probably isn't accurate to say we added that. I think we added... what we added to that was our part of our own assessment as a committee of their likelihood of achieving those. So the clear and achievable goals were part of it, but you know, we probably use some of our discretion to say, do we really believe what this application says, knowing what we know about that team or that place. And some of them were, you know, were good grants. Some of them were good projects. They didn't particularly fit your goals, but that's we wanted to really be rigorous in that selection process.
Got it. Got it. I better understand. Thank
okay.
you. Absolutely.
Sorry about the...
Nope, it's okay. It was how I was hearing it, too. Thanks.
Councillor Collette.
Well, I don't have a question. I just wanted to thank Ed and your committee for all the hard work. I know you did because I've reviewed grant applications, and they are monsters. And it's some of the toughest work that we do, really, is giving away money because we want to be so conscientious about how we select the receivers of the grants. And everybody's got a great project. So I know how hard it was, and I really appreciate all your hard work. And I think this is a great slate of projects. I'm excited to see them. I look forward to seeing results coming out of them. It just really looks like a good set of work ahead. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. We were really excited about them, too. And it was fun to review them all.
Oh, keep this guy.
Yeah,
he had fun.
Councilor Dirksen.
Thank you. Mr. McNamara, I want to add my thanks to you and your committee for the work that you do. And I know it's we rely on groups like yours to do some of the heavy lifting on those, and we can act on your recommendations rather than having to plow through all of the documentation ourselves. We really appreciate that. During your comments, you acknowledged that the recommendation that we are receiving from the COO is slightly different than your committee's recommendation, but you refrain from opining on that, on your opinion of that. Is that because you and the rest of the committee perhaps are ambivalent about it, or are neutral on the idea? I'm curious whether the committee had an opportunity to or did talk about that, and what your view of that change in the recommendation might be.
I'd have to, let's see, I actually asked the staff about it, including that in my testimony. And because the committee hadn't taken action on that, because that had to happen after we finished our work, we felt it was better for me not to report on it as a committee recommendation.
Okay.
I can tell you that we did discuss that grant, and I think we agreed with Martha that it was a worthy project without the right strategy. And we, you know, some of us have firsthand knowledge of some of the churches that are trying to do this already, and the city apparently hadn't talked to them or met with them. So getting letters of support from some of the work that's already underway, and small groups, at least two different groups of churches are trying to tackle this. Getting the city to go out and talk to them and partner with them, I think would have given the committee a lot more comfort with that grant. We also felt that one of the services the city could provide to the churches was to do an assessment of the land that they had available, and what was the zoning and what was the development capacity, because individual churches don't have the ability to do that. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, we thought there were at least two or three things the city could have done that would have been much more effective and had much more immediate results that hadn't come into the city grant. So while we liked the concept, we didn't think the grant proposal was quite meeting it. And I think if we, I think there'd probably be enough support.
So it sounds like with the conditions that the COO is recommending, if those had been in place, that kind of thing would have been in place, it might have been raised to a higher level of interest by the committee. Is that right?
That's my guess. I certainly can't speak for all the committee, but
sure.
Nobody was against that project,
okay,
as a concept. They were against the particular strategy.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So other comments or questions? Yeah, Councilor Chase.
Thank you. I really want to add my appreciation. We really had a team on this advising us, and it's not just a formality. I mean, we really do rely heavily on the work that you're doing, and the time and energy you put in is really important. So thank you again for that. One of the things that you had mentioned that was mentioned in the report that we received, or I think it went actually to our COO, but was some more clarity could be helpful around some of the goals, including the equity goals,
and wondering if you could expand a little more on how you think we could provide some of that clarity in the next round and any other areas that you have reflections for us in terms of preparing for the next round of grants.
Well, the question of equitable development came up for us, and I think in our first meeting we said, well, what do you mean by equitable development? And part of the answer was, well, we don't quite know. Here's the definition we're using for the equitable housing work. And so that came back. I think there was some feeling at the end of the meetings that might be something to have a sharper focus on by next year. But I think the staff felt that they're moving that direction anyway. The other way to look at that, Councillor Chase, is that it's such an evolving concept that getting too rigid in the definition may be limiting. So I think you want to be careful about that. I served on the committee one time for the Bruner Awards for Excellence in Urban Design. And at the first meeting, we said to the foundation, well, what do you mean by excellence in urban design? They said, what do you mean? And so we spent the first part of our meeting, the five of us going, what do we mean? And it's really a way of continuing to help that definition evolve rather than be stuck with one person's definition. So, I think moving it further with more clarity is fine. I think recognizing that that's going to be a continually evolving for us as a region, what we mean by that, whether it's who works there or who lives there or who does the work, who benefits from the work. There are so many ways to think about that. I don't think we're going to have the right answer. So continue to clarify, but don't try and get too rigid and locked in, would be my advice.
That sounds like very helpful advice. And I think it is an art in terms of, how do you define and do that. And as we're going through this process of better defining and understanding it ourselves, I think it's just going to be important for us to remember to make sure we're being as clear as we can be with the next group of folks. Hopefully you will sign up again or others from the committee, but whoever it is, for us to be really striving to make sure we're clarifying, where we have come in terms of defining and being able to articulate it as best we can.
Yeah, you want to cut off the best and most creative ideas from the community bringing ideas to you by them not fitting in a definition that you've created. Yet you want to give some guidelines. So it's a tough challenge. It's a fine line to walk. But I think your staff's up to it.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for your service, Bob.
The only one hasn't said thank you, Mr. McNamara. I think the role that you and your colleagues play is fundamental to the success of this grant program, even as it evolves, to have that sense of the real-world dynamics of development and trying to bring the planning work that we invest in through these grants closer to actual outcomes is a fundamental objective. And I think you in particular and others who have served before you exemplify that direction and that desired outcome. Thanks. You're welcome. And I really do speak for all the committee when I want to say we all really enjoyed it. It was a great process.
Well, I want to thank you, and I warn you that you should never, ever admit in public that you're
you
find this kind of stuff.
But it's time for other people to have some of that fun.
It's a little bit like the old mark that the hobos used to put on people's door jams when they gave them a meal. So it is great, and we appreciate the kind of expertise that you and the rest of the other committee members brought to it. I think part of what I kind of heard you say in conjunction with the discussion from Councillor Chase is that it is maybe better not to clearly define what we mean by equitable development, because then that gives the committee, if nothing else, an opportunity to define it. And it is the working on the definition that I think is probably intellectually the most appealing of the tasks we put before you. Then applying that it can be a little simpler, but I think that we value your opinion on things like what is equitable development, and I think that that's a good way to get that.
Yeah, I you probably need some definition, some guidelines, some parameters, and you still want to allow room for something that might not fit in it. It's a kind of, you know, equitable development. It's like kind of, you know, when you see it, you know what it is.
Yep.
And if it doesn't fit the definition, and you still think it's equitable development, so you don't want to close off those opportunities. So I think giving the committee something to start with as a starting point, but not lock them into it, is probably the bounce you want to do, at least for the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, I'd much rather have you discounting projects where you can't see that the strategy for how to implement the project has been carried out. That's a much better criteria for not approving than some sort of rigid definition of what it is we're looking for and not seeing it in that particular project. So,
I agree.
Thank you. But thank you very much for your service and for your recommendations.
You're very welcome.
Okay. Now, we need to approve the resolution. Is there further discussion? Okay, then let's have a roll call.
Councillor Collette?
Yes.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Councillor Chase?
Aye.
Councillor Harrington?
Yes.
Council President Hughes?
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. Okay, next item on the agenda is under presentations, Elephant Land Construction Management by General Contractor Outcomes. At this time, I'll recess the meeting of the Metro Council and convene the Metro Contract Review Board and welcome to the meeting with us today. Gabby Schuster from Metro Staff, Jim Mitchell from Metro Staff, and an absent Heidi Rahm, who is shaking her head no and saying we can pass over her. Because you'd have to sit all by yourself, so that wouldn't be very pleasant. Gabby, are we going to let you start out? Or?
Good afternoon, Council President Hughes and members of the Council. I'm Gabby Schuster, Procurement Manager. Next to me is Jim Mitchell, Construction Manager of the Oregon Zoo Bond and Elephant Lands. We would like to report the results of the evaluation of the Elephant Lands Construction Manager General Contractor contracting method to you today. The Oregon Revised Statute 279C and also Metro Contracting Administrative Rules Division 49 require an evaluation of construction projects exceeding $100,000 when they were procured through an alternative procurement process such as an RFP, a request for proposal. The Local Contract Review Board in June of 2011 approved an RFP process that resulted into a CMGC contracting method for Elephant Lands. The criteria back then in order to get the approval was to better manage the risk for a very complex construction project that will also allow us to keep the zoo in full operation and to save cost for the agency because a CMGC results into fewer costly change orders. And with that, I will hand it over to Jim to share the details with you about the evaluation.
Thank you, Gabby. Elephant Lands is the largest project in the zoo's history, successful partly through the use of CMGC. The team approach with the CMGC process helps the success through planning all aspects of the project details. Contractors have time to learn critical details in how the owner's operation functions in the pre-construction phase of the contract. Because of CMGC, we were able to phase the project through use of early work packages prior to establishing the guaranteed maximum price. Phasing allowed us to keep the elephants on site and maintain the same amount of space or more than what they had in their existing habitat at all times. We built the new encounter habitat in an early phase, and the elephants had access to that from their existing barn. Performing certain aspects of the work early helped offset escalation, which has been hovering around 4% per year. We were also able to reduce impacts to visitor experience related to concert season and other zoo visitor events, and manage a flow of 4.5 million visitors over a 3-year period. One major advantage we found to phasing allowed elephants to test the design. One example of that is Samudra and the Drinker. Sam drank from the drinker as planned and then decided he liked his straw or hay dipped in the water before eating it. We didn't plan on this. The small pieces of hay left in the drinker, and he'd kind of just dip it like this with his trunk, clogged the mechanism, and it quit autofilling. So we added a screen filter and adjusted a few other things, and it worked fine. Next, Sam decided, for whatever reason, to dump sand in the drinker. We tweaked the design a bit more to compensate for sand, and so far, so good. CMGC allowed mentoring opportunities that we would not have had on a conventional design-build-bid project. One example of that is Lise Crutcher-Lewis brought a minority contractor, excuse me, R&R general contractor, in from the proposal to the interview and pre-construction phase, and continued the mentorship well into the construction. Lise Crutcher established an ongoing relationship with R&R, which including having R&R provide a member of their management team as part of job site supervision. After completing the train track work and the mentorship on the Elephant Lands project, R&R General Contracting has been successful in submitting proposals and being selected for various civil and railroad projects across the state. In summary, utilizing the CMGC approach on the design and construction of Elephant Lands helped us manage risks related to scope, schedule, and budget. The general contractor partnered with the zoo team and design team to create solutions that met the needs of the visitors, animal keepers, and most importantly, the elephants. Thank you for supporting this alternative procurement, and we are happy to address any questions you may have.
So any questions for the group here? Go ahead, Councillor Harrington.
Thank you. As I was struggling with the different screens. It may just be my poor memory, but is this I've learned a lot from you coming to us with multiple construction management by general contractor CMGC proposals. But is this the first evaluation report, or am I just not recalling the prior ones?
I believe it is the first report. I've been in procurement for 5 years, and I haven't seen historic reports, so I'm certain this is the first
time. So my memory isn't as bad as I thought it was. That's whew. I found this really interesting and useful because you come to us with these proposals because of the complexity and the things that we won't know. I mean, after all, a lot has happened in this area before now, you know, pre-existing conditions, so to speak, as well as all the visitors and the animals. So I really appreciate the diligence that has gone into this and hearing the results in helping other companies grow their expertise and businesses as well. So I know every time we have this project before us, we just sing its total praises. But we should. It's a job well done as you've all followed through on that on behalf of the public, because these dollars are the public's dollars. So thanks again, and I look forward to getting these reviews in the other cases of CMGC. Thank you.
Others who wish to say? Yep. I think we all are in agreement with Councillor Harrington that this has been it's both a valuable process for doing the project, and it's valuable to get the report back so that we can be assured that what we had asked for can happen under an alternative program, an alternative procedure, rather than being stuck with what the state for many, many years thought was the only way that you could do public contracting. So congratulations on making this work and on particularly on a successful project. So, and hopefully Samudra will find other distractions and not be so interested in tearing apart his facilities. So,
thank you, and I think he has.
I think he has. I think he's well on his way to doing that. Okay. With that, I'm going to... Oops, I'm sorry, Craig.
Yeah, I don't have a question, but I do have a comment. I think that it's very impressive. Well, I appreciate having the evaluation and reviewing it, but I think looking at a project of this size and complexity and uniqueness and having only 5% in change orders and having spent a lot of years in contract management and construction, that's pretty impressive, and I think that proves the value of using this process and technique of these kinds of projects. It proves its value.
I would like to say that a lot of that credit needs to go to Jim and also Heidi Ron, because they worked very hard to keep the risk down and keep it to 5 change orders.
It's always a matter of implementing something that works well in theory, but has not been tried very much. And so, Jim, you're to be congratulated for making this work. Heidi as well, even though she's too shy to talk today. Something we always knew about.
So different for her.
Okay, if there's no further discussion, I will adjourn the meeting of the Metro Contract Review Board and reconvene the Metro Council so that we can consider first read of Ordinance Number 17-1408. Ms. Papsdorf, if you could read that by ordinance, or by title only.
Thank you.
Ordinance Number 17-1408, for the purpose of adopting amendments to Title 14 of the Urban Growth Management Functional Plan to improve the regional growth management process.
So we get a twofer today. Twofer. Instead of a Tim O'Brien, we get...
I don't need this now.
Thank you, Council
Ed
President
Roger,
Hughes, and councilors. I am joined today by my colleague, Roger Alfred, from the Office of the Metro Attorney. I'm going to give you a little bit of an overview of the background that's led us to this point, and then turn it over to Roger to describe the contents of the ordinance and the proposed code changes. As the title ordinance implies, this has to do with ways that we're seeking to improve how the region runs its growth management process. We have a long tradition in this region of preserving farms and forests and being very deliberate about where growth should go, directing most of it to our existing urban centers, and being very intentional about that process. And over the years, we've sought to improve how we run that process so that you and various stakeholders get to have the kinds of dialogue that you want to have. You've given us direction that you want to shift the debate that we've had in the past away from the theoretical debates about growth and more towards the merits of proposals made by cities for specific urban growth boundary expansions into concept planned urban reserves. And the proposed amendments you have in front of you today are another step along that path. It builds on work that you've been doing over the years, including adopting a policy to take an outcomes-based approach to growth management. You've also identified in the regional framework plan 6 desired outcomes that guide your decision-making. You've adopted, along with the county's urban and rural reserves that describe areas that are either suitable for urbanization over the long term or, in the case of rural reserves, areas that are going to be off limits and are going to be protected as farms and forests for the long term. You also passed a policy that requires that there be a concept plan for an urban reserve before you expand the urban growth boundary, and that's intended to really have those discussions about how to pay for the pipes and pavement that you need to create a community before expanding the urban growth boundary. And as you just discussed on a previous item today, you have a grant funding program that helps to pay for those local planning efforts. And so the code amendments you have in front of you today are again, building on those other improvements I just mentioned. And they're the result of the work of the Urban Growth Readiness Task Force that President Hughes convened last year. The task force included mayors from around the region, county commissioners, representatives from the Department of Land Conservation and Development, the Home Builders Association, 1,000 Friends of Oregon, and remarkably, despite all those varying interests, the group came to some consensus recommendations after a number of meetings. And fundamentally, what they recommended was that the council should find ways to exercise greater flexibility in its growth management decision-making. And along with that flexibility, you should have high expectations for cities that are proposing residential expansions. And so the task force, again, made some consensus recommendations about how to do that. They had some discussion about what those expectations for cities should consist of. You all, the council, took those recommendations earlier this year and unanimously accepted them, directing staff to work with our Metro Technical Advisory Committee to turn those suggestions into code language. And you also directed us to work with our partners to go down to Salem this last legislative session to seek changes to state law that would create a mid-cycle urban growth management process, and we succeeded in that effort. So, again, we've been working with MTAC, the Technical Advisory Committee, over the last year. In September, the committee came to some unanimous recommendations on proposed code changes to, again, improve the process for how we manage growth. Those proposed amendments do a couple of things that Roger will elaborate on. One is that they establish Metro's procedures for mid-cycle urban growth boundary amendments. And the second piece is that they lay out those expectations for cities that are proposing expansions. MTAC worked quite a bit on this question of flexibility versus certainty. This is something that came up in your discussion you just had moments ago about what we mean by equity in the grant program. That's something that MTAC dealt with as well, specifically the question of equity, how to lay out expectations for cities that are both clear but also provide some flexibility. IMPAC, the Metro Policy Advisory Committee, followed up on MTAC's recommendations, and also, after making a few minor changes to MTAC's recommendation, came to a unanimous vote in favor of the code amendments that are in front of you today. So with that, I'll turn it over to Roger to describe what those amendments consist of.
Thanks, Ted. Good afternoon, President Hughes, members of the council, Roger Alford of the Office of Metro Attorney. You have a hard copy before you that is the Exhibit A to the ordinance, which includes the proposed code amendments, and I'm referring you to that because there's one minor change that's highlighted. Actually, technically, it's the same change, but in two different places. That is a change from what came out of the MPAC recommendation. It's really just a technical clarifying addition to that section, just to make it very clear what it is that we're talking about in that section. So I would also add that the language that's before you here in this Exhibit A is really virtually identical to what was before the council when you reviewed this and we had the discussion at the work session about a month ago. So this is really almost exactly the same. There were a couple minor changes suggested by MPAC that were not really substantive changes. I think they were a little just more along the lines of, you know, clarifying and making sure that the process was going to work. So what you have before you, the first three pages are two new sections of Title 14. Those are the sections that are designed to implement the legislation that was passed, House Bill 2095, regarding the mid-cycle amendments. So the first section there just creates the procedures that Metro will go through as far as taking requests for cities to make these mid-cycle amendments. And then the second section is contains the criteria that will be applied by Metro when we look at the city requests for mid-cycle amendments. And the main key sections there are really on page 3, there's subsections 1 through 5, and those are the sections that lay out what is going to be expected of cities as far as Metro approving their requests or not. And then the next two pages are changes to the existing code provisions regarding legislative amendments. So that's why you see some portions there are redlined, included, they're underlined. So that's just indicating what the new material is. And essentially those five subsections there that are highlighted, I guess that's page five, those are basically a mirror image of the criteria that we're requiring for the mid-cycle amendments, the main difference being that for these legislative amendments, they're not hard and fast criteria. They're just factors that will be considered by the council when it's deciding whether or not to expand a UGB in a particular place. So it's that old, our old favorite factors versus criteria discussion. It's back. So, and then the last section there is really just notice. We had to add a new section that talks about how the notice will be provided for the mid-cycle amendments. And then the highlighted language really at MPAC, at the last MPAC meeting, we just added, you'll see what that section says, is the metro regional growth forecast and population distribution in effect at the time. Mm-hmm. It used to not include the word distribution. The MPAC recommendation was to include distribution, and then after going through that process, we realized that we were being maybe a little conversational with that language, and we just needed to sort of make it very clear what it was we were talking about. So that's what that change is. And then so that language will be added in the Exhibit A that will be before you to the ordinance for adoption in a week. Great. And that's the extent of what I have to tell you, and obviously we can answer any questions.
Okay, are there questions for either Ted or Roger? I guess not right now. We'll open the public hearing and see if, which I don't think is going to generate any questions either, but we'll see.
Would you like us to stay here? Or
yeah, you can stay if you like. I don't think that people are going to crowd you out. Okay, so I'm going to open the public hearing on ordinance number 171408. And if there's anyone who wishes to testify, and since it's a pretty diminished audience, I'm going to suggest that if you want to testify either way, come on down. And I don't see anybody actually moving all the way down, so I'm going to assume that nobody wishes to testify and close the public hearing. Second reading, council consideration, and vote on ordinance number 171408 are scheduled for Thursday, November 2nd. He disappeared. This next item on the agenda is second read of ordinance 7.1, ordinance number 17-1410. Sorry, Councilor, did you?
I just wanted to note that.
Oh, I was going to note that. Yeah, that we have a letter in our file under during the public hearing that we have a letter under our file from the deputy director of 1000 Friends of Oregon indicating. Support-ish.
General.
And some kind of qualified support. Is that fair? Mm-hmm. Okay. Look at it, Bob, because he's my legal authority.
What, about quasi?
Quasi?
It's a judgment call. In the
quasi-legal. Okay. So that will be entered into the record. Second read of ordinance number 17-1410. Ms. Papsdorf, could you read the ordinance by title only?
Ordinance number 17-1410, for the purpose of amending Metro Code Chapter 5.00 to add certain definitions.
Okay, first reading and public hearing for ordinance number 17-1410 took place on Thursday, October 5th. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Okay. We have folks available if there are any questions. Are there any questions from council?
No questions.
Any discussion?
Nope.
Roll call.
Councilor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councilor Stacey?
Aye.
Councilor Chase?
Aye.
Councilor Harrington?
Yes.
Councilor Collette?
Yes.
Council President Hughes?
Aye.
Motion carries. The next is our second read on ordinance number 17-1411. Ms. Papsdorf, could you read that ordinance by title only?
Ordinance number 17-1411 for the purpose of amending Metro Code Chapter 5.01 to establish licensing requirements for certain facilities that receive and process source-separated recyclable materials and make housekeeping changes.
Okay. First reading and public hearing for ordinance number 17-1411 took place on Thursday, October 5th. Could I have a motion, please?
Move for approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Same people are here to answer any questions on this one, if you have any, or any discussion. With that, why don't we go to a roll call?
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Councillor Chase?
Aye.
Councillor Harrington?
Yes.
Councillor Collette?
Yes.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Council President Hughes?
Aye. Motion carries. With that, we move to Chief Operating Officer's Communications.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Welcome back.
So most of what I have is actually in the form of thank yous. The first one is thanks for letting me go to the International City County Managers Association Conference in San Antonio. I think we talked at the work session. I've been to San Antonio now 3 times in 3 years. And if you get out of the convention center area, you find it's really a marvelous community, really diverse, interesting, a lot of history there. It's going to be 300 years old next year. And so it's, and they have, I've never had a bad margarita in San Antonio, so it comes with other benefits.
Let me make a note of that.
Yeah, if you have a place, if you have a craving for that, that's the place to go. There were two really big takeaways for me in the conference, and I just thought I'd share them. First is some really good thinking and discussion going on around the country around sort of the next thinking around new urbanism. Richard Florida was at the conference and gave an update. His new book is out to the book he wrote about the creative class about a decade ago. And his takeaway is that even in communities that are succeeding, the success is what he called spiky. And I think we're grappling with a lot of that work around here with our equity work and our diversity work and some of the other work we're doing, basically finding that the creative class is doing quite well, and cities that support the creative class is doing quite well, but if you're not in that group, if you're part of the 60% of workers who aren't in that group, you're probably not doing very well. And so that the next frontier in thinking about urban challenges is in thinking about how do we make sure that the wealth that's happening in those great places like Portland is spread throughout the community. So I bought his book, and I will share it with any one of you who'd like to read it afterwards. And also, all the keynote sessions get sent out to me. You can look at them, so I'll send you the link in case you're interested in hearing what he has to say. And also, Bruce Katz from the Brookings Institutions talked about his new research. And he looked at three sort of issues that every great community has to look at. And I'm going to miss what they are because that was like 2 whole days ago. But he looked at case studies in Pittsburgh, in Indianapolis, and in Copenhagen to look at sort of what are the innovative practices that are actually helping create distributional equity inside of cities, not just wealth for a subset of the population. So that was a really inspiring talk because I felt like a lot of the elements that he talks about, we might not be on the cutting edge of some of the ideas, but we have all the potential to be able to work on that. So I'll share that with you as well. The other theme that always stands out is sort of what are the new skills in leadership, and in particular, what are the new skills in leadership as we move into a less, more volatile, less certain era, both in terms of how people engage with their governments, but also just how people engage with one another. And we had a marvelous, very inspirational, but also very pragmatic talk from a gentleman named Simon Bailey, and I will also send you a link to that because I think it's worth a It's like watching a TED Talk where you need to be pumped up. It's worth watching just because it gets you pumped up about what's exciting and what's sort of terrifying in the work that we all do. Second, I wanted to make sure you saw that we have released the job posting for the Deputy Chief Operating Officer. It's a moment of both great sadness and sort of great feeling of possibility for me, but I would ask for your help in pushing that out. If you meet people when you're out and about where you think that they would be sort of a great partner at Metro and helping us lead the internal services departments and a great thinker in helping us evolve our governance systems, I'd love it if you would encourage folks to apply. And you can also keep helping me mourn the departure of Scott Robinson. So anyway, And then last but not least, I've got some really great feedback from offsite community-based partners about your offsite work session last week. And I just wanted you to know that showing up and engaging was noticed by a lot of folks. And I know that going offsite is sometimes challenging, but I thank you all for engaging in a very non-traditional work session and in a topic that can be kind of strange and awkward, but it was important for everybody in that room to really lean in. And then I've heard some great feedback about your offsite in Forest Grove, and also that some of you attended the equity cohort community discussion at the zoo on Saturday, so thank you all for that as well. But I think when we go other places, it's noticed and it's appreciated, so thanks a lot.
Thank you. Councilor Communications, look at there. That says no speaker, and yet somebody there. Go ahead, Catherine.
I received a request from RDPO, the Regional Disaster Preparedness Organization, to review a support letter for legislation before congressional committees about wildfire management. It seemed like a no-brainer that, yes, we would support this proposal, so I signed on to it without distributing it to you. Rather, I will follow up. I was under the deadline, and I was afraid I missed it. So luckily, I didn't miss it, but I will forward that letter to you.
Okay, thank you. Speaking of letters, you should have received an email copy of a letter from me to the Regional Solutions Advisory Committee. On behalf of y'all, if you got a chance to reach, you also have a hard copy at your desk. I'd appreciate permission to go ahead and do that on your behalf.
Yeah, I got it. Good.
I got it. Pretty much everybody.
Yep, I think you're set.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and do that. Councilor Chase.
I had one just really small thing on that letter. It made it sound like we're the only MPO in the country when I think we were talking about being the only elected, regionally elected entity. So I don't know if it. I drew the card for reporting on MPAC this week, and so we met last night. Good meeting, and we heard first the technology presentation that we've all heard in our work session. So Metro presented that, sort of the utopia, dystopia effects you might see from technology. And I think the comments were, one might think, we'll probably land somewhere in between. I think the comments were either it is going to be dystopia or it is going to be utopia. So it was kind of interesting set of input, and I thought much appreciated.
It was primarily just on transportation technology.
Yes. It was the same one we had in the work session.
Yeah, right. A lot about automated vehicles and Uber and Lyft and how those are going to affect our community. And so there was actually some very good input on all sides that will help us kind of consider these issues as we go forward. The other thing that was presented was Wilsonville and Beaverton's strategies around affordable housing, very informative and helpful, and it's been really a nice component to just hear what strategies folks are pursuing in those local jurisdictions. Councilor Harrington was there. I don't know if there's anything to add.
I would just add, so they were both on the housing strategies, trends in the communities, and they were each reflecting, as every community is, that affordable housing is a concern all across the region. But the city of Wilsonville particularly provided some copies of their new housing needs analysis, and they made a point of sharing with us that they had tried a very different method. And I had a chance to look at the document today, and true to form, it's graphical, it has charts, it has statistics, but it isn't the normal heavy, wordy document. So it's more like a slide presentation and shows the variety of needs and how they've been trying to deliver on that and what they have left to do. So there was a lot of learning there. And it was a really interesting contrast to see what Wilsonville presented on, which included the development of Villebois over time, as well as what they're looking for with the how they've concept planned the whole Frog Pond area and what they refer to as Frog Pond West, which is already in the UGB, Frog Pond South and Frog Pond East, which are both in urban reserve areas. So they don't use they don't call it Advanced Road anymore. It's all Frog Pond. And we've been talking for years about when is Frog Pond going to be planned? Mm-hmm. Well, they've done it, so that's good. But then the city of Beaverton presented, and it was far more about their needs and their strategies as opposed to, you know, concept plans and what kind of policies and investment decisions the city council is making. So it's really nice to see that the different cities are coming into this and presenting their information, and their colleagues around the MPAC table are really enjoying it. And I think we have one more, the city of Tigard, coming in as well. So there's a list of, I think, six now that have gone through it, and it's all really useful information and is available on our website under MPAC.
I thought that the one of the women presenting for Beaverton on their housing strategy, Cadence, I can't remember her last name, but she was somebody we ought to sign up for more, because she really kind of gets these issues really well. And so MTAC or some other role would be great for her, I thought. Just throwing that in there.
No, it's really nice. This is a time where the experts in these local communities have an opportunity to shine, and every one of them is. I think every presentation we've all been learning more, and MPAC has been having rich discussions. Now let's hope it continues as we move forward with the urban growth management cycle all through next year.
Others who wish to comment on council communications? We had a meeting last week, I believe it was, of the board for GP 2020. And heard some information about income distribution and the forecasts for income distribution in Portland metro area. And in some respects, Portland is not dissimilar from other successful Western cities. We are doing what Mr. Florida would have suggested in his book we ought to do, which is to recruit the creative class. And I, quite frankly, have spent much of my public life in the belief that if we created really high-end jobs, that even though there were parts of our citizenry who didn't have the qualifications for those jobs, that those people would have disposable income, which would create a healthy economy, and that healthy economy would benefit the folks who had lower skill levels or lower training levels. And it's the old, a rising tide lifts all boats. The data now really challenges that theory, and I'm rethinking all of my life, at least that part of it that's public. And what they were pointing out was that what we've had in Portland is a tremendous growth in the upper income, the number of people holding upper income level jobs, and a tremendous growth in the number of people who hold very lower income jobs. And the middle is kind of going both directions, apparently, or going someplace, because those middle income jobs are going away. That the difficulty in that it is the high-end people who are setting the housing market. Mm-hmm. And so it isn't just that we're not creating jobs for the lower-end people as fast as they need them. It is that by creating those upper-ended jobs, we're actually hurting the low-end people in the long run because we're driving the price of housing too high. I'm not yet prepared to say, well, let's just stop getting all of those high-tech upper-end jobs, because I do think that there's a benefit to the community of doing that, but we really need to rethink that strategy in a way that helps us make sure that we're taking care of the lower-end people as we're reaching that. Councillor Chase and I were talking today that I really think that what's happening out of Powell Division, for example, is a discussion about how do we not how do we avoid making the transportation improvements that we need to make, because I think this is a similar phenomenon. We make transportation improvements. I was talking yesterday to some group, and we were pointing out that the irony that we put in, for example, the Yellow Line out through a historically low-income African-American community in order to provide them with better transit. And what happens is we provide them with better transit and we gentrify the neighborhood, and the original residents have to move to some place that doesn't have good transit because that's where the cheap housing is. And that what I think we're beginning to explore out on the Powell Division Project and Southwest Corridor also is maybe what we need to do is to take care of the affordable housing in those regions first before we make the transportation improvements. And linking those two things together, as well as linking the question of housing affordability to the whole economic development strategy, is, I think, where we're going to have to go in the future. And it certainly suggests that there's a couple of messages, I think, in there, that if we're going to do a transportation funding package at some place down the line, that funding package, I think, has to include some money for affordable housing. And what that also says is that probably means that we're going to have to plan on doing it because it is not something that TriMet can legally do. So just the kind of things that it's the problem with going to too many meetings because the messages all kind of intercross. And
they may be related, Mr. President.
Cross-pollinate, yeah. And somehow or other give me bizarre ideas as well as dreams. So anyway, with that, anyone else? Okay, then, seeing no further discussion, the council meeting is adjourned. The next regular council meeting is scheduled for Thursday, November 2nd at 2 p.m. in the Metro Regional Center Council Chambers. There we go.
I think those things really need to happen concurrently because we build the